Happy solstice, the turnaround point for the year. I'm Rhonda McBride. Coming up on Juno Afternoon, our right to vote. How much protection does it need here in Alaska? Thoughts on how to set a healthy table for the festivities and strategies for enjoying holiday fare in moderation. Why an organization that provides behavioral and mental health has added a pediatrician to its staff. Some of the conversations you can look forward to on Juno Afternoon. What do you think about all this snow that just got dumped on us? Boy. Well, gather your firewood, your blankets, your warmest sweaters, because we are headed into a cold spell. Tonight, mostly clear skies, lows from 17 to 25 degrees, northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, putting a bit of an edge on things. And we'll have those northeast winds with us all the way through Thursday. Tomorrow, clear skies, highs in the upper 20s, northeast winds topping out at about 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, turning colder, clouds on the increase, a chance of flurries, lows from 12 to 22 degrees. Thursday, clouds should decrease with snow flurries, highs from 17 to 22 degrees. On Thursday night, mostly clear, lows dropping down from 3 to 13 degrees. Your Christmas Eve forecast for Friday, well, you'll have an excuse to wear your new Christmas sweater. Clear and cold with highs from 8 to 14 degrees. Friday night, have that hot cider and chocolate ready because lows will range from 1 below to 5 above. Christmas Day, mostly clear with highs of only 8 degrees, lows dipping down even more from minus 3 to 3 above. Clouds come back into the picture on Sunday with a chance of snow on Monday, warming up slightly, but not a lot. So just hope that Santa will bring you some hand warmers. Just in case you didn't notice, today is solstice, happy solstice, and we have help from our friends at the Marie Drake Planetarium to help us mark the occasion.
This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the December solstice. So Tuesday, December 21st, 6:58 in the morning, is the December solstice, the transition from fall to winter. So what is the reason for the seasons? Well, the Earth's rotational axis is tilted at 23.5 degrees to its orbit around the sun. And the December solstice is when the sun is southernmost in the sky. So at local noon on the December solstice, here in Juneau, the sun will be 8 degrees above the horizon. Now, just as a contrast, in Rio de Janeiro, in the southern hemisphere, which is at 23.5 degrees south latitude, at local noon on Tuesday, December 21st, the sun will be directly overhead, 90 degrees above the horizon. And also in the southern hemisphere, rather than going from fall to winter, it's going from spring to summer. And that is the reason for the seasons, the tilt of the Earth's axis. So on Tuesday, sunrise here in Juneau will be 8:42 a.m. Sunset will be 3:10 p.m. for about 6 hours of light. Now, solstice means that the sun is standing still, so the rate of change of daylight is only going to be about 30 seconds. However, that rate of change increases as we approach the March equinox, when the rate of change here in Juneau will be about 5 minutes. So here in the northern hemisphere, the December solstice is from fall to winter. In the southern hemisphere, it's from spring to summer. And the Marie Drake Planetarium is doing shows again with our new digital projector. Check our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org and hope to see you there. Thank you.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Tlinédi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on what were once tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from their homes from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and the future.
Hans and Gress, ka eat with the shu yi we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khana khaya ha an kakh gunish cheese.
Ganeshchish for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, voting rights are what makes democracy tick. And all over the country, there's a debate on how those voting rights should be protected. And joining us now, Kyle Harris, who is one of the organizers of a voting rights march that is scheduled to be held in Juneau, starting at Marine Park. And I am just kind of curious about how many people are going to turn out to a voting rights march in the midst of the holidays and with all that snow out there. Not to put out a discouraging word, but it'll be interesting to see what your turnout is.
You know, I'm genuinely curious too, Rhonda. Well, that remains to be seen. I'm just trying to get the word out. I mean, appearing on Juno Afternoon or being heard on Juno Afternoon is part of my efforts to get the word out on this. It's happening tonight. 7 o'clock, Marine Park.
Well, I think if you do get a good turnout, it will show something. It'll make a statement that people do care about this issue. And you hear a lot about it in the news, but I don't know that it's really come to a bubble yet. People really understanding what's at stake.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly trying to do everything I can to raise awareness of this issue. I've got a Facebook group. It's a private group, but it's, you know, Juno Voting Rights March Facebook group. I think social media can be used for a lot of, you know, like any technology, a lot of ill, but it can also be an incredible tool for organizing, you know, good stuff. And I've got 80 people on this Facebook group. Membership has been growing. So let's see, if it'd be great if all those people could make it. And if they can't, that's okay. I understand it's a very busy time of year. Snow on the ground, it's going to be cold out. At least it's warmed up a little bit, right?
Well, it's just interesting. It sounds like you started this all on your own, sort of. I mean, something propelled you to do this, get this going. What was that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm in like, yeah, that's helping me finish a thought there. You know, in respect to social media, so many of us, we post these things online and how we feel about things. And, you know, that's all well and good to share a meme, and it's easy to do, but at the end of the day, I don't think it makes us feel like we've done something, but we really haven't. So no, I've never done anything like this before. So I'm really just kind of flying by the seat of my pants here, you know?
But I guess what was the motive for this? I mean, aside from the fact that you want to do more than just post stuff on Facebook, what has pushed you to the point that you're doing something you've never done before?
Well, I was listening to some NPR programming, actually. And there's a lot of legislation going through right now that, whether it's in, Georgia, that's going to be, not allowing people to vote after church service on Sunday, not allowing voting on a Sunday. That's, I understand that. And that's one provision that's there specifically to keep people, you know, from voting after their church service, which has been a very traditional way to get out the vote in that particular community. Something that, you know, we should be expanding the right to vote, not closing it off to marginalized people. And we're seeing more and more of this legislation going through state legislatures. And, you know, it certainly was the case that you had federal preclearance as part of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Certain states that were shown to have a history of discrimination in who they allowed to vote, you know, whether that was, you know, Jim Crow type laws that, you know, required a, you know, a literacy test before you voted, which we've had in Alaska, I should add. You know, while I'm on that topic, I was surprised to learn. And the more I learn, the more outraged I become that there was a English literacy requirement written into the Alaska State Constitution, and that wasn't struck down until 1970. I had no idea. So this isn't just something that happens in, you know, the South or Southern states. It's something that happens in Alaska too. And we've, you know, efforts have been made by the Department of Elections in Alaska to allow greater access to the ballot box by, you know, specifically Alaska Native people. But I think there's still a lot more work that could be done.
So how do you propose we go about kind of vetting where we stand compared to other states? And of course, we've got legislation in the hopper too, that has the potential to affect access to the polls. It's viewed differently. Some people view the legislation as a way to prevent voter fraud. Others see it as a way to suppress voting. But I guess in a way, do you have any ideas on how we as a state could kind of vet our own process? Do we need to do that?
Sure. Certainly guaranteeing the integrity of our elections is important. We don't want to prevent voter fraud, but I think we also need to verify that voter fraud is happening in the first place. You know, a lot of times these voter ID laws are, you know, described as a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. You know, there's claims of millions of people voting illegally or dead people on the voter rolls. A lot of these things are used to justify, you know, things like purging names from voter rolls. But when you dig right down to it, it's just not happening. It's just not true that it's happening on the scale that some people claim it is.
So what's going to happen tonight at your march? Will it just be a march? Will there be some presentations?
Well, the plan is to meet at Marine Park at 7 o'clock, take a short walk up to the Capitol or more precisely the plaza of the court there, right across from the Capitol. And folks will have a opportunity to speak if they would like. You know, I've been wondering that same thing myself. You know, what is the point of all this? Is anybody gonna notice? I originally was kind of, you know, hoping to walk through the downtown business corridor, but I was notified that wasn't really going to be practical. There's certain procedures when you're organizing a march, and I'm still learning about those things, just kind of throwing myself into it. So, you know, instead we're going to be marching up Main Street, but, you know, hopefully to call attention to this issue. I mean, voting rights are our most basic democratic right. You know, there's a lot of other things that flow from the right to vote. If you as a constituency don't vote, well, then you're not going to be catered to by politicians, essentially.
Well, I guess it's always good to remind politicians that the voters exist.
especially
when it's not an election year, but we are coming up on an election year. So Marine Park at 7 o'clock, and then a walk up to the plaza in front of the Capitol building, and people will have an opportunity to share, it sounds like, when they get there.
You got it. And maybe, I mean, I hope that it'll be a chance for like-minded folks to meet up and do something besides just posting that meme on Facebook.
Okay. All righty. Well, I want to thank you very much, Kyle Davis. And I imagine that you are probably going to have some other events, that this is just the first of many, you hope, or
yeah,
based on
so.
Turnout?
Maybe something when the weather's a little bit warmer, you know, just trying to build some momentum here.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rhonda.
Well, thank you for being on our show. And it is solstice. It is a time of change. So who knows what will happen this evening. I will be curious to find out. So thanks so much, Kyle.
Thank you.
Kyle Harris, who is organizing a march tonight on voting rights at Marine Park, is where it begins at 7 o'clock.
My name is Richard Stokes. I enjoy writing about the winter solstice because I think it presents hope. Here's a poem, Seasonal Promise. November slid into darkness, each day darker than the one before. Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday passed as the sun rose later in the morning and went to sleep earlier in the afternoon. On days when rain and snow clouds hovered just above the spruce tops, you wondered if the sun rose at all. But here we are at December's bottom, but at the door leading to summer. We know the world will tilt to open its window more to the sun. We are promised longer lit days and brighter spirits into summer.
Support comes from Alaska 529. Experiences that spark a child's curiosity and imagination can lead to big things. And Alaska 529 works to help families plan for it. More at Alaska529plan.com. Save in Alaska, study anywhere.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Thank you for being here with us today. Well, the holidays, boy, and I'm sure everyone out there is busy getting ready for them, are a time when diets get demolished, New Year's resolutions are made. But our hope is to help you get through the holidays with a plan and to kind of think about some of the long-term consequences of healthy eating. And I have joining me Cynthia Gordon. She is a nurse and a diabetes education program manager at Bartlett Hospital. I know that you have lots of important information to share with us, but what got you into diabetes education?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. That's actually a pretty funny story. I was a brand new nurse, and I was being interviewed by the nurse manager, and she asked me to name my two challenge areas, and one of those challenges was diabetes, because it was very complex. And she hired me, and about 6 months into the job, she asked me to take over being the lead for the diabetes patients. And so from there, I developed my knowledge and became a certified diabetes educator.
Well, we also have another guest with us that I'd like to introduce, Loretta. And I have trouble saying your name, but it's Bevigny, right? Am I saying
that's
it correctly?
Pretty close. Yep.
Say
that's
it
good,
for me
Rhonda.
One more time. Bevigny.
Bevigny.
Bevigny. Okay, and she is with TOPS, Take Off Pounds Sensibly, and her husband is also a diabetic, and we'll talk a little bit about the TOPS program in a moment here, but basically, you have been able to keep off weight for a long time, and how have you managed to do that in a nutshell? I know it's not something you can sum up easily, but just give us an idea.
Okay, I've been in the TOPS program for 7 years, and it took about 2 years to get down to the weight where I wanted to be. And each person gets to choose the weight where they want to be. They're not constricted to a schedule. They can choose the weight where they think they can handle it. So it took 2 years to get down where I wanted to be. I am where I want to be for 5 years now. And what has helped me, and it helps everybody in the program, TOPS teaches people how to eat, what to eat, when to eat. And it's an educational program. My eyes were open so much from what I learned from the TOPS program. We have meetings every week, and we get information there. And we also have the TOPS magazine, an international magazine. Well, we get a lot of good things.
So we can talk a little bit about that later. But Cynthia, I want to turn to you as a diabetes education program manager. You probably sadly find that your work is more and more in need.
Mm-hmm. It is. And I'm sorry to say that when I first started 20 years ago in diabetes, one in about 15 people had diabetes. Now it's one in 10. And unfortunately, by the year 2050, we expect one in three Americans to have type 2 diabetes. So it's growing. It's considered an epidemic by our national medical entities here in the country. And it's a big concern. It's not a good thing to have.
So what about, there are two kinds of diabetes, type 1 and type 2, and type 1 usually begins early, and it's less related to diet but to genetic issues, and type 2 usually results later in life with weight gain. Are you seeing any changes with the number of people that develop type 2 diabetes? Is that more common?
It is more common. Type 2 diabetes is about 90% of everybody I see. Type 1 diabetes is about 10%. Unfortunately, though, both type 1 and type 2 are increasing. Type 1 is related to an antibody that attacks the pancreas, and the pancreas is the organ that produces insulin. type 2 diabetes, there are many, many different things that work. There's about 9 things that go wrong in the body with type 2 diabetes. So we have to address each of those things that are going wrong in the body.
So a lot of people sort of obsess on food when it comes to type 2 diabetes. How important is diet in controlling type 2 diabetes?
Well, there's actually 3 things that are major for controlling diabetes and in type 2 diabetes. One is food, you're correct. The other one is exercise, and the other one is medication. And each of those is just as important as the other one. So it's mainly those 3 things. So the way I like to say it is, if someone is only taking medicine and not exercising, they're still not going to get adequate blood sugar. So it really does take all 3. It takes the food, the medication, and the exercise in order to have good blood sugar control and good health.
So I want to turn a little bit to Loretta, because your husband is a diabetic, and I know that you have worked as a family very hard to help him stay on track. And I think that's so important that someone who's diabetic gets support from their family.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it certainly is. And speaking about one of the parts that Cynthia said, the 3 parts that are necessary to control the diabetes, exercise, we have found, working with my husband through the years, 23 years of suffering diabetes too, if he controls the food, we do pretty good at controlling the diet. We know what to eat and what not to eat. But exercise, sometimes he doesn't feel like exercising. So he lets it go for 3 or 4 days. Right away, you can see the difference. Right away, the difference in the numbers of the off the meter.
In other words, for people who aren't diabetics, you regularly check your blood sugar to see how high the sugar is. And so you can see the points go up when there is an exercise. So, Cynthia, what do you think about that when you hear that? Is that kind of what you see in your experience as correlation between blood sugars and exercise?
Absolutely. So exercise is a great way to lower blood sugars. And there's actually 2 kinds of exercise. There's the aerobic, such as walking or running. And then there's anaerobic, and that's more like weightlifting. Each of those forms of exercise do a lot to help control blood sugars. The more muscle mass you have, the lower your blood sugars are going to be in the long run. Mm-hmm. If you go out for a walk, your blood sugars will drop pretty quick. So those are very, very important things to do to help control blood sugars.
So one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is the holidays are getting very complicated, fixing food for people, because people do have a variety of health issues. You may have a diabetic coming to dinner. Or you may be hosting someone, or you just may want to stay away from temptation, figure out how to keep yourself safe. And we also have people who have had the bypass, bariatric bypass surgery, and they have certain dietary issues. So the holidays can be very complicated, and of course, we want to be able to support people. So Cynthia, what are your thoughts on how we can do that to make sure that we don't derail anybody off their track, so to speak?
Yep. Well, as a host, I think it's important to offer many different kinds of food. I think it's important to offer low calorie, low carbohydrate, but I also think it's okay to offer, more sweet things every once in a while too. The onus really does fall on the person and their health condition to make the choices when it comes to food. And that's what I do, is I help people learn about food and how it affects their blood sugar when they eat certain foods. And in the diabetes world, there's really only about 1 food that I really ask people to refrain from, and that's regular soda pop, because it's just way too sugary. But every other food is fine, but it all comes down to portion. It's about learning what foods raise blood sugars, what foods don't, and making sure when you do eat a food that raises blood sugar that you're eating some, but just not too many. So it's all about portion.
Well, Loretta, you want to chime in on that? Because apparently sure. That's a big part of TOPS.
Oh, it certainly is. TOPS has about 7 different aspects where we educate people who come to the meeting about using food and eating food. And portion control, wow, that is a big one. And I learned so much. We have 3 levels of calorie intake. You don't have to count your calories, but we, on our daily journal, food journal, we are encouraged to do the food journal and check out these little boxes. And it's all the nutrients, the carbohydrates, the vegetables, the fruits. Check off that box. And when you run out of boxes, you're supposed to stop eating because by then I have reached my caloric level. And it's according to the body, the size of the body that each person has, what they choose to have. Portion control is good. And pop, oh my goodness, that Cynthia mentioned. That's how my husband got onto diabetes 2 in the first place. He was at work. He was drinking soda pop. The vending machine was right there, and so he just drank soda pop every night. I didn't know that. We did not carry soda pop in our house. I knew soda pop was bad news. What? There's 11 teaspoons of sugar in one can? Oh, my goodness. No. Mm-mm.
Well, I think that is part of the problem is that there are things that are all around us that we don't have an awareness of how much sugar there is. I will share that I am a diabetic, a type 2 diabetic that became what my doctor calls a 1.5 diabetic, where you are insulin dependent. In other words, I have to take insulin to control my diabetes. And, you know, and I think that you don't realize until you start checking your blood sugar what these choices mean in terms of raising your blood sugar. And boy, soda pop that has got sugar in it is definitely bad news for a diabetic. But you know, a lot of people think, oh, well, you can't have sugar, you're a diabetic. And Cynthia, you could explain that it's not necessarily sugar that raises blood sugar. Other foods have sugars in them that work, you know, that have the same issues as soda pop does, but they're not obviously sweet. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Right. So there are 3 main types of food. There's protein, fats, and carbohydrates. Of those 3, carbohydrate is the group of foods that raise blood sugar. And sugar is actually a part of the carbohydrate family. So yes, there are other food sources besides sugar that raise blood sugar. And kind of what it harkens back to is many years ago, fortunately before I got into diabetes, there was the so-called diabetic diet, which is what pretty much everybody thinks of when they think of, you know, diabetes. And back then, you know, they weren't allowed to eat foods with sugar to control their blood sugar. Well, what we found out is that did not work. What we know now is that people who have diabetes, we want them to eat certain amounts of carbohydrate. Again, proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. Of those 3, carbohydrate is the only food that fuels our brain. And when we don't eat carbohydrates, we can actually develop something called brain fog and just feel like a wet rag. But the challenge is we want people to eat some, but just not too many carbohydrates. And everybody has a different amount of carbohydrates that they can aim for. It really is important for them to work with me and a registered dietitian so we can kind of help figure out that ideal amount of carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wow. So we hear a lot about these keto diets and that, you know, you're supposed to avoid processed foods and carbohydrates like rice, unless it's like brown rice or wild rice. But I guess maybe could you clear up some of the misinformation about that you should just totally avoid carbohydrates altogether? And is that dangerous in some ways, you think?
Well, no one really in my profession or in the dietitian profession are big fans of keto for that reason. Again, our bodies run on carbohydrates. Our brains run on carbohydrates. So we're not big fans. But the thing is, you know, if I eat 1/3 cup of rice, it's going to raise my blood sugar about the same as one small apple. Each of those are considered one serving size of carbohydrate. So I can choose to eat rice, or I could choose to eat a small apple, or I could eat 3 cups of popcorn and it would raise my blood sugar about the same as those other two foods. So you do have a lot of choices of carbohydrates to eat. But again, the ideal is to make sure that you're eating some, but not too many. If someone wants to do a low carb diet, that's fine. You know, it's not a problem. Some people can eat more carbohydrate and have it not affect their blood sugars. So everybody is different in how they digest their food. So if I ate a third cup of rice and someone else ate a third cup of rice, they might not be able to handle a third cup of rice. So it just depends on their body and their digestive system.
Boy, and there's always just so many good rice dishes, mashed potatoes at the holiday table. So Loretta, you have a lot of experience in kind of offering healthy alternatives. Can you talk about some of your holiday strategies?
Yes. Early on, we went to our doctor, and she recommended for this trying to get the diabetes under control. She asked Julio to stop.
That's your husband.
Stop. Yes. Stop eating potatoes, corn, white rice, and the fruit juices because they're very, very high in fructose. So we switched out. We had to learn something to switch out to. If you're not going to eat those things, you've got to put something else in its place. Well, sweet potatoes. He loves sweet potatoes, but they don't have the glycemic like white potatoes. White potatoes are heavy in the carbohydrates. And I wanted to say something about the carbohydrates that Cynthia was talking about. That's true. We do need carbohydrates, but I just read a report in a health magazine from the health food store, and it said that 60%, the majority of Americans are eating 60% carbohydrates in their 100% diet. It would be better if we switch it, go down to 20%, switch it down, the carbohydrate intake, and uptake on the protein and especially vegetables. And that's one thing also that we learn in TOPS, the plate, how to form the plate. Half of the plate should be vegetables or a safe fruit. Avocado is a fruit. Avocado is excellent in the fats and the good stuff that it gives us. Then you have 3 ounces of protein, especially fish is very good for diabetics too. Back off from the red. You can eat red meat, but you know, don't make it the big thing. So in the holiday schedules for eating, I think ham is part of it. Sometimes, let's see, we have ham and meat, and I don't know what else they have. But anyway, ham is heavy, heavy in calories, and it'd be better to stay with fish, although this is not a season for fish, but the meat. Other things is when we go back to meeting with people in these groups now at this time of year, our latest magazine gives us some options. It says, make the best choices you can from what's available. Whatever it is that the host is presenting to you, the diabetic person knows what they're supposed to, it can safely eat. Okay, do that. Then choose that thing, something that you can find. Another thing, I would take the sparkling water with me. You know, a can or 2 cans, and just go into the kitchen and the host say, okay, can I put this in a glass? And then you walk out as if you're drinking along with everybody else, but you're really drinking water. I have a good recipe here that we receive from our club, eggless nog, and it's very simple to make, and I think it tastes good. I haven't tried it, but it sure sounds good. Half a gallon of cashew milk, a half a cup of blue agave sweetener, and 1 teaspoon of ground nutmeg. That's easy. Put it all together, and you, okay, I have an eggnog. Walk around with an eggnog instead of an eggnog that has 12 eggs in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you do a lot of thinking about things. Well, we're going to have to wrap things up. I think this is a fascinating discussion to talk about ways that you can navigate around the hazards of unhealthy eating. So, Cynthia, in your mind, what would be a perfect way to celebrate the holidays? You go to this meal. What do you do?
Well, it's really up to the person who has diabetes and, you know, what do they want? What is appropriate for their blood sugars? You know, if they get to a party and they already have high blood sugars, they probably don't want to eat something that would make it go higher. But it really is on the person who has diabetes to make those decisions.
All right. Any parting words, Loretta?
Yes, I have a good question. It's out of the article that I'm reading from the Tufts magazine. This is a good question for diabetics and anyone who wants to keep their weight where it is or not gain any more. This is the question. Do you have a favorite high-calorie holiday food? Think about it. And then think about a way around it or how much you're going to take of it. But think about it ahead of time. Before you go anywhere.
Sort of headed off. All right. Well, I want to thank both of you, Cynthia Gordon, who is the Diabetes Education Program Manager at Bartlett Regional Hospital, and Loretta Bevigny, who is with the TOPS group, Taking Off Pounds Sensibly. So thanks so much for sharing your knowledge with us today. And here's to happy and healthy eating.
Thank you, Rhonda, for inviting us.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us. I'm Rhonda McBride. Jammie Health and Wellness Center has just hired a pediatrician on staff. Dr. Marna Schwartz joins us now to tell us about why a behavioral health, mental health organization has added a pediatrician to its staff, and we have some of the other staff members who will be joining us shortly as well. But Dr. Schwartz, you want to tell us a little bit about what Jammie Health and Wellness Center does?
Well, Jammie Health and Wellness, as many people have lived in Juno for a long time, has been around 30 plus years and initially started out as a community mental health organization, and over the years has really grown and expanded. And over the last couple of years, it actually added a primary care component. And so I believe for maybe the last 3 years or so, we've had a primary care clinic here called the Midtown Clinic, which is located in the Lemon Creek area. And it's a small primary care clinic that's currently staffed by a family practice physician, Rob Haight, who many people in the community have probably heard his name over the years. And just recently, I ended up being hired to help out on a part-time basis with the younger set, so the pediatric population, because we're providing services for all ages currently. So it's something that we've been able to provide for the last couple of years, but we're really focusing on it and expanding it a little bit to provide some additional pediatric services in the community.
So it's this hodgepodge of all kinds of services, from behavioral health, mental health, help with substance abuse. So it's kind of interesting that there is now this pediatrician position as part of the complement. Why was that added?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think Jammie Health and Wellness has really focused on the whole person. I think the saying is that, you know, Jammie Health and Wellness, the mission is helping people live their own best lives, and recognizing that an integral part of mental health is physical wellness, and an integral part of physical health is mental wellness. And so I think the integration of those services is something that is actually pretty mainstream and is is something that really is sort of the wave of the future in terms of how healthcare services are delivered. And I think JAMI Health and Wellness really felt as though it was important to start providing services in a more integrated manner. And so this allows the organization to do that in terms of the healthcare services. In terms of the pediatric care, like I mentioned, they've actually been offering care for children all along. Family practice docs often see children as part of their practice. So it's really just, I'm working on a part-time basis. I'm someone who's been around in the community for a long time, and I wasn't currently as involved with patient care as I have been previously, and it seemed like a really nice opportunity. I also have a special interest in kids with developmental disabilities and kind of more challenging from a behavioral health perspective. I really enjoy working with parents and trying to help them be the best parent they possibly can be and working with their kids who might have more complicated or complex medical and behavioral health conditions. And so I think it's a nice fit in terms of providing those services really throughout the lifespan. So starting in childhood and then moving forward. JAMI actually now has, so we have a lot of the behavioral health services that you mentioned. Those are located in Salmon Creek. There's also a family-based program at JAMI Family out by Fred Myers that actually provides mental health services for children in the family context, and then the primary care services at the Midtown Clinic. So there's three separate locations now where services are being provided.
So that's very interesting, though, that there is this kind of more holistic approach, because I imagine that when someone has a behavioral or a mental health issue, that there might be a physical health tie-in as well.
Yeah, I think that's really appropriate in terms of thinking about it. I was listening to your last speakers, and I think that, you know, oftentimes as people get older, even with children, you know, you can have more than one health issue going on, and they really can have a big impact on each other. Imagine somebody who had pretty significant mental health issues and actually at the same time was struggling with type 1 or type 2 diabetes. You know, thinking about how to manage those things together is really challenging. So I think it's a good way to go. It's a much more holistic approach.
Well, I imagine that a lot of people probably might need services from an organization like JAMI, but they probably don't know that it's available. I mean, what kind of a person might think about accessing some of JAMI's services?
Well, the Midtown Clinic, which is where I work, which is a primary care clinic, is really for anyone in the community. It's open to all comers. We take public and private insurance, and we also offering sliding scale services based on income for folks who aren't necessarily covered by their insurance. So it's a federally qualified community health center lookalike. So we're able to provide a lot of services that, you know, work out well financially for folks who maybe don't have great insurance coverage. So really the services here are very specifically kind of medical, but we can access and we link into all the behavioral health services. There's also Genoa Pharmacy is co-located with us. So it makes it really easy for people, you know, if they get services in the clinic, they can stop at the pharmacy on their way out, and it works quite nicely for.
Boy, that's helpful, isn't it? Because people so often have to go all over town sometimes to get what they need. Well, before we run out of time, and we just have a few minutes, we have two of your staffers with you, Loretta Harris and Rena Nordgren. And let's start with Loretta. Is there anything you'd like to share about the services that JAMI offers and the role it plays in the community?
I honestly think that it's amazing. I honestly, before I started working here, didn't know about this clinic myself. So I do spend a lot of time letting people that I know about this clinic and trying to help spread the word. I'm definitely excited that we now have a pediatrician on board. I have kids of my own, but I haven't worked with them in like a professional setting. So like too much. So I'm ready to like get to work with kids more than I have in the past.
So Loretta, what do you do at the clinic?
I'm a medical assistant.
So you have quite a perspective. You see people come in from all different, for all different reasons.
I do. Right now, I am mostly doing a lot of like the treatment side of stuff for the clinic. So I assist people who have like substance abuse stuff going on, and I help them with medication and have them like see the provider here for that. So I think that's awesome also.
So Rena Nordgren, what do you do at the clinic?
So I am also a medical assistant, and right now I am Dr. Haight's medical assistant. So we treat all patients and provide all the services we can for whoever comes and joins our clinic.
So what do you think is important about the clinic, you know, from your perspective of being a medical assistant and seeing all the different types of people that come with different issues?
I think a big thing that's amazing about Jamie's Midtown Clinic is that we provide services from behavioral health to primary care. And a lot of people get us confused with behavioral health because they think that's the only thing we can help with, but we can also provide primary care services. And so whether it's like a cut or diabetes or birth control, or even like what Loretta was saying with substance abuse, we provide all those services and a lot of people don't know about us.
Yeah, and I can imagine with substance abuse that people that are dealing with that maybe have neglected other aspects of their health. So it's probably good to have something that covers all the bases.
Yeah, most definitely.
All right. Well, I am afraid that we are going to have to go because we are out of time here. But I want to thank all of you for being here with us. Dr. Myrna Schwartz. And also we have Loretta Harris and Rena Nordgren with us from the Jamie Health and Wellness Center. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit & Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
And that will do it for Juno Afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us and hope you have a safe evening. Drive carefully out there with all that snow.